Okay. So I'm Shane Clark, and I'll be talking about a secure remote storage system for computational RFIDs. This is joint work with Masture Selagica, who, as mentioned, couldn't make it here due to visa issues, Ben Ransford and Kevin Fu, all from UMass, as well as Ari Jules from RSA. So I hope that most of the audience is familiar with RFID tags. We just got a good introduction to HF tags and some physical properties. We're concerned with UHF tags in this case. But the standard tag that you may have in mind is a simple state machine implemented in hardware, and it returns a static identifier to a reader. There's no programmability in general, and there's no ability to do any meaningful computation. And this is great for some industry applications like inventory tracking, stuff like that. And you can fit them in really small areas, which is great because they can tag things even per product. But we'd like to see a little more out of RFID. And to that end, we'd like to consider what happens if you add a microcontroller, giving it fully programmable general purpose computation, some amount of non-volatile storage so that you have some way to permanently keep state or data, and one or more sensors maybe so that you can actually observe the environment and perhaps report about the environment to a reader. So we call tags that have these modifications computational RFID tags. Currently, Intel is the only company that makes one. It's their WISP prototype produced by Intel Research Seattle. But computational RFID tags introduce a lot of interesting possibilities. There we go. So CRFIDs, just like a standard UHF tag, are completely batteryless, and they harvest all of their power from an RFID reader, meaning that there are no limitations in terms of the size or maintenance of a battery, and you can get power from any reader that goes by opportunistically. They're able to interact only with RFID readers, not with other tags, like a standard tag. But they're programmable, which is a big win when you're trying to do things that are a little bit more interesting and you don't want to have a whole manufacturing run just to test something. Unfortunately, they come with a lot of limitations because they're saddled with sort of the physical constraints from RFID. They have a tiny energy reservoir. Because they're batteryless, they use a small capacitor for all of their energy storage. And this means that their effective life cycle is a second, maybe less. You might get a little bit longer if you sleep carefully to conserve energy, but these are frequently losing power. They're perhaps without power more than they have power. Based partially on this, they have very limited use of their local storage because they can't stay awake long enough to use it. Contributing to that problem is the fact that their local storage is incredibly expensive as power goes for a CRFID. You can see on the figure here, read barely registers. It's a couple orders of magnitude less energy than a write operation. And that write operation consumes about as much energy as you require to do 10,000 cycles with the CPU just doing register-to-register computation. So it's a huge cost. To make things even a little worse, you're saddled with erase-before-write semantics, where once you've made a state transition from 1 to 0, you're forced to erase back to a 1, and you have to do this in big chunks. Finally, the total amount of non-volatile storage available is very small. So this is actually unique amongst platforms of this size. If you consider something a little bit larger that people are maybe more familiar with, like a moat, this is the maximum power consumption breakdown. And if you had to pick any one thing to avoid in this case, I think everyone would say radio. It clearly consumes the most power of any of these operations. CRFIDs operate on a much smaller overall budget, and the sizes of the various wedges are also much different. So flash here completely dominates other operations. And the question here is, if you have to avoid flash, can you somehow use radio for storage? And that's what we'd like to look into. So if we just want to outsource storage to a reader, it seems simple. You just send state to a reader and you retrieve it later. And maybe it's cheaper than using flash. But immediately, we run into some problems here because you're sending something over the air and the reader's not necessarily trusted. We'd like to minimize our trusted computing base to be just the CRFID itself. We don't want to have to rely on any authenticated readers or anything at all that we have to trust with our state. And we want everything that goes through the air to be protected. As a couple examples, an RFID reader could maybe read the data that you're sending them, say that you're reporting vital signs. I'd consider that private information that you don't want someone to read. Alternately, you could just return junk or maliciously crafted junk so that it seems like good state, forcing you to do a useless computation or something that you're not interested in. So to this end, we introduce cryptographic computational continuation passing, or CCCP. That's much less of a mouthful. So the idea with CCCP is to add the bare minimum in terms of security to enable CRFIDs to effectively use an RFID reader as a storage mechanism. And this is interesting to us primarily because CRFIDs, being so constrained, are not able to get a lot done in terms of computation. I actually heard Brian Rivest last night refer to RFID tags as cryptographic fig leaves, presumably because they're only able to cover the bare essentials. So our overall goal in enabling remote storage is to get real computational progress out of these devices. If you have something like a second to work and a big computation to do, like some public key operation, you're not necessarily likely to complete it. And we would just like to see some sort of change of state toward accomplishing our goal. So this could be the completion of a loop, even the completion of an iteration of a loop, anything that's a change of state that we can make progress on over a number of life cycles. Additionally, we'd like to eliminate what we call Sisyphean tasks. And for those unfamiliar, in Greek mythology, Sisyphus was a man sent to the underworld to roll a boulder up a hill. And once he finished rolling the boulder up the hill, he was free to go. Unfortunately, every time he got the boulder to the top of the hill, he would immediately drop it, and he was doomed to repeat the task for eternity. Analogous things could happen with CRFIDs, because even a single public key operation, like I said, may exceed your typical energy availability, and you may never make any progress. A naive option to solving this might be manually splitting tasks. As some of you heard Rich Canning say yesterday, developers don't understand battery very well, so that's not necessarily something that's effective or easy, especially in the case of a CRFID, where the amount of energy you have is non-predictable and incredibly small. So we would really like to just automate this so that we can send our state to a reader, get it back later, and make some amount of progress. So we're after a delay-tolerant computation, but computation that actually gets somewhere. There's been some previous work in this area with checkpointing on CRFIDs, in particular the Mementos project, which appeared at Hot Power last year. Mementos borrows its name from the movie Memento, where the main character has amnesia and periodically loses all of his short-term memory. In order to make progress in the investigation of his wife's killer, I believe, he does things like take pictures of people and write information about them on the back. And for things that he considers really essential, he actually tattoos himself with the information. Mementos does something quite similar. Say you have some set of tasks that you'd like to accomplish and not enough energy to get it done. Rather than just failing over and over again until you get some remarkable amount of energy available, you checkpoint locally as you start to run out of energy. So in this case, you'd write something to flash. And this allows you to spread computations over multiple life cycles, which is exactly what we're looking for. So this would be an illustration that's simplistic, where the CRFID has reserved some amount of energy to perform its checkpointing operation. It spends a time without energy, and then it wakes up, retrieves its information, and keeps computing. But I said a dirty word a number of times on this slide, and that's flash, which we've already established is really expensive and to be avoided. So what we're looking to do is just eliminate flash as much as possible and do this over radio. Like I said before, there are security problems with doing things via radio, and we have to address some relatively common security goals. Confidentiality, to ensure that no one's reading our data, integrity and authentication to make sure that the data the CRFID receives is both from that CRFID and not tampered with in the interim. Data freshness to avoid replay attacks. For example, setting the same piece of state over and over again back to a CRFID would leave it computing the same value indefinitely. Finally, there's the goal of availability, but we're not able to address this with CCCP at this time, mainly because a simple availability attack would be for the reader to accept a checkpoint from the tag and then throw it out, or just store it and never return it. So that's sort of outside the scope of the current work, but it's something that would be interesting in the future. I would argue that the existing security goals are tough enough with CRFID for a number of the RFID constraints that I've talked about, such as its lack of a battery, its tiny capacitor, the fact that it's rebooting every few seconds, it has only a few hundred bytes of RAM, and flashes to be avoided whenever possible. So based on these goals and the massive number of constraints we have with the tag, we try to develop some really lightweight security primitives to use. Actually, we're using existing security primitives, but we're trying to compose them carefully. So we choose a stream cipher to ensure confidentiality, because a stream cipher, when you're running it, the simplest case is just XORing, and that's the lightest operation we can think of. For integrity and authentication, we chose UMAC, a universal hash function-based MAC. Cryptographic MACs, according to Black's paper on UMAC, can be up to an order of magnitude worse in terms of time and memory consumption, and we certainly don't have the time or energy to do that. So we choose these because they have low cost in terms of energy, like I said, but there's an immediate challenge here because we're using a stream cipher and a keyed hash. We have to maintain key streams somehow. And maintaining those key streams is going to take some amount of computation, a pseudo-random function, some place to get some randomness. It'd be great if we could just reuse key stream bits. Unfortunately, two-time pads are somewhat less effective than one-time pads. It's not an option. We don't have enough energy to compute these on the fly, so it'd be great if we could find a time when we have sort of plentiful energy and we can just do a little pre-computation. Luckily, CRFIDs support exactly this sort of time. We refer to this as a good power season. So there are times when a CRFID could expected to be idle. And for example, it could be awake and have no computation left to complete. If you're using one as a sensor, maybe you've sampled something 30 times in the past second, and you really don't need to anymore. Alternately, you're receiving harvestable energy from an RFID reader that doesn't understand the CCCP protocol. In this case, you have energy, you can do computation, but you have no opportunity to offload anything, and you're going to die eventually anyway. So we think that you might as well use that time to produce keystream bits. So our solution to producing keystream bits is in a good power season to simply use a block cipher in counter mode to produce pseudo-random bits and write them to flash when energy is plentiful for use later. So finally, we have to ensure data freshness. Like I talked about, we need to avoid replay attacks. And that's going to require us to store at least some state in trusted storage. And that's going to be a problem for us because the only trusted storage we have is our expensive non-volatile memory. Faced with two poor options, no resistance to replay and using flash, the question is, how can we use flash most frugally? So our solution we call hole punching. And to illustrate hole punching, consider a binary counter, in this case representing the decimal number 7. We'd like to transition it to the number 8, just increment it, which should only require that we do this. But that's not possible on a CRFID, because this is flash with erase before write semantics. To actually make this transition, we need to first erase the entire byte and then rewrite zeros to all of the non-1 bits. So to increment the counter once, we've actually touched 15 bits of our most expensive resource. Our solution's really quite simple. We use a unary counter, a complemented unary counter, just because of this particular type of flash. So you count the number of zeros, and you have the value of your counter. To increment the counter, you're only ever required to write a single bit. So it's completely consistent. Every transition is only a single bit, and it's completely minimal, because one bit is the least we can change. So now that we've addressed confidentiality, integrity, authentication, and data freshness, we'd like to be able to put all these pieces together into a protocol. And you might imagine something where the CRFID just sends state to the reader that it's done something to, and we're good to go. It's a little bit more complicated than that because of the constraints of RFID, once again. We don't have any ability to communicate autonomously. Tags can only respond to a query from a reader, and they have no ability to initiate a conversation. So it's going to require a few round trips and a few messages. In the end, the store procedure ends up looking something like this. When a reader comes in range of the CRFID, it sends a query to the tag. This query both lets the tag know that there's a reader in range and supplies power as well. So the CRFID, given energy, starts to work and it completes some number of tasks. We'll say it completed the first K tasks that it's trying to. When it realizes that energy is going down, or perhaps it's finished something it'd like to store, it sends a message back to the reader saying, hey, I need to offload some of my state. Will you let me do this? The reader responds, for RFID reasons, with a message that's essentially an ACK plus a number. This number says how much data it's willing to accept in a single transmission. Once the CRFID has received this message, it knows that the reader is willing to participate in the protocol, and it takes the time and energy investment to perform encryption, construct a MAC, and perform a hole punching operation to update its counter. Once it's completed all of this, it simply sends the ciphertext in MAC in some number of messages of appropriate size, and the reader stores it. Later on, when the CRFID comes in contact with the reader again, it needs to be able to retrieve its data. And this process is a little simpler. The reader has the data. Maybe it's the same reader. Maybe it's a reader that's networked with the previous one, and they all participate in the protocol. The reader simply retrieves the data from wherever it stored it in memory and sends the ciphertext in MAC back to the CRFID. The CRFID takes this state, verifies the MAC, performs decryption, assuming that the MAC and the counter have checked out, and can continue its computation, completing all N of its tasks. So that's the whole of our protocol. And the question now becomes, is the performance actually better than using local storage after we've added this cryptographic overhead, we're performing encryption and MACs and writes to flash? First, I'd like to give a little bit of background on our experimental setup to explain sort of the metrics that we chose and why we measured this as we did. The first step in the experiment is to program the CRFID with a task. In the case of these experiments, we were comparing checkpointing state to flash locally and sending state to a reader via the radio. So these are the tasks that we're trying. We charge the CRFID to a known voltage, disconnect the power supply from the CRFID, and then we observe the voltage drop and execution time with an oscilloscope. So we do this because it allows us to isolate the CRFID from any incoming energy, and if we know the capacitance of the capacitor, the initial voltage that we charged to, and the time that it took for the execution to complete, then we can calculate the amount of energy consumed by each operation. We choose to use energy as our metric because we believe that it's the most appropriate for a CRFID. Things that are sometimes more common would be power or time, but neither one of them actually tells the whole story. So something that takes a ton of power but completes incredibly quickly may be more efficient in the end. Something that's very fast but consumes a lot of power may also be more expensive. So the big picture here is that secure remote storage using triple CP is actually cheaper than using local storage after some crossover point. In this graph, the crossover point happens to be about 96 bytes. You can see data size is on the x-axis and energy consumption is on the y-axis. And we can break this down a little further to understand exactly what's expensive and what's cheap for the CRFID to do. If we remove the encryption step, we gain just a little bit of energy savings, but not much. This is because of our choice of a stream cipher where we're only performing an XOR operation. So it's a really small overhead that scales with the input size, but it's not significant in terms of the overall consumption. So the only thing remaining is our assurance of authentication and integrity. The green line that I've just added here is triple CP without any of the triple CP operations. It simply sends the data to the reader via backscatter. And you can see that this is much cheaper than ensuring authentication. And that's because every time that we'd like to do authentication, we're forced to hash the entire state and construct a MAC with the output of the hash. So we just incur a startup cost there. As you can see, moves our crossover point quite a bit further over. Sending stuff via radio is almost always cheaper, actually, but obviously, we're interested in securing our transmission. Finally, we took some time to calculate what the cost would be using local storage if we were actually taking into account the cost of erasing. This is a calculated value because the energy available is actually so little that we were unable to test this for any reasonable data size. You can see that the value on the y-axis has doubled in its maximum. So having to actually write and erase flash is prohibitively expensive for data sizes supported by CRFIDs. So with this data in mind, we conclude that triple CP does in fact provide CRFIDs with secure remote storage that is cheaper than local memory. And there's of course room for improvement. One of the major problems right now is actually the state of CRFID hardware. The WISP, like I said, is a prototype device, and it's not really optimized. We know for a fact, actually, that the backscatter transmission hardware on the WISP is at least 4 times less efficient than it could be. So we would expect to see all of our energy measurements for radio shift down quite a bit. In the paper, we discussed some extensions for long-term storage. It's nice to be able to make computational progress, but if you can finish a task, maybe you also have data that you'd like to store long-term. That introduces some new problems because you need to keep around a set of cryptographic keys for a longer time until you're absolutely sure you'll never need it again. There's also some work to be done on WOM codes or write-only memory codes. WOM codes are essentially clever ways to encode data such that it can be rewritten without performing an erase. My citation here is rather old, but there's new work being done on this, Texas A&M by Andrew Jang, specifically to bring WOM codes to flash memories. Finally, it'd be great to see a public key crypto system implemented on CRFIDs, and we're hoping that CCCP actually enables this, and some coworkers of mine are working on that presently. So, in summary, we believe that CRFIDs are a compelling platform because they can go where other devices cannot, and they don't ever have to have a battery or a consistent energy source. Unfortunately, they're limited by available energy. We can sort of sidestep this by introducing CCCP, which is able to actually provide remote storage that is less expensive than local storage and hopefully just as secure. Last thing, if anyone's interested in CRFIDs as a platform, I maintain a page that has all of the publications ever written on CRFIDs. There are only about a dozen. but they have applications in ubicompetent sensors for people that are interested in that. And there's a couple security papers in there as well. Finally, I would like to thank Ian Goldberg, our shepherd, for all of his guidance and feedback during the revision process. And I'll take questions now.
Yes, I'm wondering if you know, if you have any sense of how long into the future we can expect flash to be as relatively expensive as it is right now?
So that's a good question. I didn't explain this during the talk, but doing backscatter transmission actually requires only a single transistor. So I feel pretty confident saying that flash will not be as cheap as backscatter in the near future, because each cell of flash is some number of transistors greater than one. So assuming that there aren't really great advances in flash technologies, I think that this will remain relevant.
And how does the chip has to ask for its context back, right, when it comes in at earshot of a reader? Is that protocol in place yet?
I glazed over it slightly, but what would happen when you want to receive data back is the reader always has to contact the tag first. So when a tag is in range, it would query it. It would recognize the tag based on its ID, and then it could ask the tag if it would like its data back. So part of the protocol requires the reader to be proactive in terms of offering to put data back for the tag.
And there's no axe on the write, so all the computation is essentially resettable. Like if the last store fails, it'll just get the previous chunk of computation back and redo it?
Yeah. So the goal is that if the store fails, then you could use the last computation. It's a bit of a sticky situation that we discussed more in the paper. If you update the counter before you send to the reader, then you know that you sent a checkpoint, so you can't be fooled into using old data if a reader sends you data really quickly. But if you try to do it after you've sent data, then you may find that you die actually while sending the data or immediately after it and before bumping the counter.
And that's worse, though, right? You never want to resend under.
Yeah, if you failed to update the counter and you send data to the reader, then you'll get data that you think is too new and reject it. So there's definitely an atomicity issue there, and the answer is that you have to be able to bump the counter in 2 steps, once before you send and once after, is sort of a commit bit.
Okay, let's thank our speaker again.